the blade. Ambling over, Ryan saw the scattered remains of carved bones and bits of plastic mixed together, the steel weapons reduced to mere ghostly outlines of rust. Lifting the largest piece of metal, he studied it carefully.
What's this? A matchlock? No, a pipe gun.
Dark night. Nobody on the islands would use these anymore. This guy must have bought the farm a long time ago. A lot more than a couple of years.
This is new bones on top of old weapons. Layers of people died over the decades.
Folks must have been trying to reach the ruins for quite a while, and something always stopped them right here.
Or trying to leave.
Welcome to El Dorado.
Don't get you, Doc. I've been to El Dorado. Big villa in South Texas. Nothing but bars and gaudy houses.
I think he was referring to the old poem. A fabled city of gold that nobody ever reached alive.
However, we've got a bastard lot better than matchlocks and wooden clubs. Okay, I'm on point with Christy. JB and Dean cover the rear. We go slow and watch our steps. Whatever race these folks could live underground. Anything appears, shoot on sight.
Warily, they assumed formation and crossed the field to enter the tall grass. These plants were green and alive, not dead weeds, the grass mixing with wild wheat and barley, almost as if this had been a farm long ago. The wind made a hushing sound as it blew over the waist-high crops.
Watch for waves.
As the grass became taller, the ground became mushy, and the shoulder-tall plants stopped at the bank of a rushing stream, the water so crystal clear they could see to the bottom. Knowing their canteens were low, Ryan called for a halt, but had JB test for rads and Mildred check for chems. They both pronounced it safe to drink. Happily, the warriors rinsed out the canteens before filling them again, then took the opportunity to splash some of the water on their faces, doing a brief wash. The stream was cool and tasted faintly of mineral deposits. Best they'd had since arriving in the Marshall Islands. When they were finished, the group waded to the other side. But Jack called a second halt and passed Dean several weapons before wading back into the middle of the stream and lying down. Rigorously, the teen began rubbing himself all over, trying to remove the arena mud and gristle from his hair and clothing. The downstream runoff was black at first, then as the layers washed away, it turned brown and finally clear.
Oh, better.
The albino waded to the shore and took back his blaster. He looked like a pale, drowned rat, but nobody shifted position when he came near anymore.
Damn pigs.
You're preaching to the choir on that, my friend.
God damn, that water's cold.
But it'll do until we can find some soap.
Greatly refreshed, the three of them dried as the group walked toward the forest, the formation of trees proving to be only a slim windbreak a few yards wide. Leaving the forest, they traversed a rubble-filled culvert, with half of a pre-dark bridge high overhead, the span ending in the middle of empty air. Reaching the top, the group easily crawled under a heavy wire fence, braided with plastic strips that hid whatever was beyond. The companions found themselves standing on the gravel berm of a pre-dark road, the smooth pavement extending out of sight in both directions. Across the road was a collection of warehouses, rusty cars with flat tires standing at ancient parking meters. Streetlights hung from power cables over every intersection. More cars stopped forever at the faded crosswalks. An assortment of houses lined the side streets, the front yards wild tangles of ivy and flowers, a few of the homes completely buried under the unstoppable advance of the resilient ivy. Not a window was broken, doors were closed, and telephone lines were still connected to the poles. An unnatural silence lay heavy over the pre-dark metropolis, and the companions fought a small shiver.
Don't like this. The damn place is in perfect condition. As if everybody simply stopped moving for 100 years.
Not quite everybody.
Rising above the factories and homes were monolithic downtown skyscrapers. Stretched between two of the high-rises was a giant web, exactly like the one they'd seen on Spider Island.
Now we know where the bones came from.
Gonna need some Molotov cocktails. Those worked last time.
Sort of.
There's a beer plant. We can get bottles there.
Keep your eyes peeled for a gas station.
Ryan started down the middle of the street.
Need the soap powder from a laundry, too.
The Webley felt heavy in Christy's hand. Her knuckles had been badly skinned in the rock climb, and the weapon was already christened with specks of blood. High above the silent streets, something watched the seven people proceed deeper into the heart of the city. The newcomers were wounded and poorly dressed, but with good boots and very well armed. This indicated a high probability that they were scavengers who'd raided a supply dump. Thus, additional weapons may not be in visual range. Grens were almost a certainty, and possibly even an energy weapon, a portable microwave beamer, or Bedlow laser. Such lethal armament was not to be taken lightly, and willful self-termination was authorized only as a last resort. More data was required to form a course of action. Closing the blinds, the walker moved away from the window, stepping off the ceiling and through the door to stealthily make its way down to the ground level. Clearly, further reconnaissance was necessary until it could decide exactly how and when to exterminate the humans. Walking down the middle of the street between the lines of dead cars, the companions tried to keep a watch in every direction and found it impossible. There were just too many windows, sewers, and doorways in the metropolis. If somebody wanted to hide, there was no limit to the places where they could ferret.
Creepy. I've been in plenty of ruins, but this place... well, it isn't ruins. It's just old and empty. I keep expecting traffic lights to click on and the cars to start moving again.
This was no nuke attack. Maybe poison gas.
Or a neutron bomb. Damn thing only aced people and machines, but did nothing to the buildings. Got no idea how it worked.
Well, actually, a deuteronium-rich... skip it.
Going to a police car, Ryan studied the interior, then smashed into glass with the barrel of his Webley. The green squares of safety glass scattered underfoot. Reaching in, he took the pump-action shotgun out of the skeleton's hands and racked the slide. A shell came out, and he closely inspected it. The plastic was firm, the brass bottom shiny, and without any signs of age or corrosion.
Looks good, JB. Take it.
Hell, if the whole place is like this, we'll be ass deep in supplies.
This city's so dead. I can feel the death lying over these buildings.
There were skeletons inside almost every car with the windows closed, piles of bones behind the steering wheels, briefcases on the passenger seats, foam coffee cups still perched on the dashboards.
You sensing anything alive?
In every direction. Plants, animals, things I can't describe, but no human life. Or rather, nothing I can call human.
For 1,000 silent ghosts trod the ancient way, seeking a speaking to those warm and alive.
Rattling the handle of an ambulance, only to find it locked, Mildred turned at the quote and frowned.
Don't know that one. Emerson?
One of my own efforts, Dr. Wyeth. From when I wrote poetry and thought it a very important thing to do, 1,000,000 years ago.
You're a poet?
In due honesty, I must admit my works were very poor things indeed.
Quiet. We're being watched.
The hairs on the back of Ryan's neck stiffened. The man raised the stire and gently worked the bolt to chamber around. This clip was the first of the ammo from the pirate's armory, and he hadn't had a chance yet to check the cartridges. He was going to find out real fast if it was any good.
Yeah, I can feel it too. Just like when we were traveling with the trader, and the convoy would roll into a pass. There was nothing to see, but we could tell the bastards were there anyway.
Gorilla or spider?
Jack reached for a knife and bit back a curse. Damn pirates took everything. He needed to get more soon. Had to be something in this city he could use or adapt. Slowly turning, Ryan didn't answer, his eyes staring hard at the alleyways and rooftops. That was where you could launch an attack from. And he'd learned from experience to always consider what the enemy could do, not just what they might do.
Whoa!
A rat exploded into gory fur off the hood of a car, Dean's 460 Nitro Express round continuing onward to slam into and punch a hole through a brick wall. The Weatherby's blast echoed along the concrete canyons of the city, slowly fading into the distance.
If the locals didn't before, they damn well know we're here now. Put away that long cannon, Dean, and use the Browning.
Sure, Dad.
The boy cleared the breech of the heavy rifle, then slid in a third round before slinging it over his shoulder. The 460 rounds were so huge, the breech could only hold two spare cartridges in the internal mag, plus a third up the pipe. Not a lot, but the thing hit like a bazooka. Pulling out his Browning semi-automatic blaster, Dean clicked off the safety and jacked the slide.